afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Usually, I'm here all by my little bitty self on Thursdays for the first segment of the program as Alfred and James Corbett joined you after the first break. But because of my little situation that I've had with my allergies, I talked Al into joining me for the first 20 minutes of the program today, just so
I can get through emergency, break the glass.
So, I'm here with my co-host, Alfred. What's your name, Al?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay. And of course, I want to ask you, Al, it's going to be kind of funny for you to be introducing yourself at the end of this segment for the following segment with you and Corbett.
Well, it might seem funny to you, but it won't seem funny to me, Melody.
Oh, maybe it's just my allergies. Anyway, thank you for joining us this afternoon. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, and James Corbett will be joining you after the first segment today. Today is Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. Gold today opened up 1288 to the high, 1281 to the low. And we're at 1287, just up a few, just up change. Silver up 2 cents at 1858. Platinum was up one at 977. Palladium was down seven at 797. The USDX today was stronger, 0.43 at 100.54. Crude oil was down 0.09 at 53.02. And the paper markets today. Yeah, the markets really don't know what to do. I don't know. I think they're waiting to see what happens after the holidays. You know, we have the G7 meetings. There's always pressure on markets and so forth. But the Dow, after, struggling a few points all day long this past couple of hours, it did break down a little bit more, down 138 points, 20,453. The NASDAQ was down 31. At 5,805, the S&P was down 15, 2,328. The euro is 106, down 0.41. 10-year yield, 2.23%. Remember, when they did that quarter point hike, how long ago was that, Al? The last one? You had that 10-year yield at 2.60, and now we're looking at 2.23% on that 10-year yield. So the fear keeps being factored in, the fear and greed index, 26 on the fear and greed index. So that keeps dropping. We finally had a triple-digit drop in the Dow, but we're still looking at 20,453. You know, Al, there's just so much, first 20 minutes of the program, it's really hard to get into depth and a lot of things, but, there's just, I don't think anybody really knows. I think what we're seeing out of Washington is a complete change. It's like we've almost had a new election. That's one way of putting it. Now, which personality did we elect to office? How many personalities does this person have?
Trump and Mr. Hyde, is that what you're saying?
Well, multiple personalities, it's a possibility, but I'm not saying that's the case, but there's certainly a lot of changes in views and opinions. We're not sure if it's part of the programming that comes with the office of the president. You learn that you really are a puppet. They will help you.
Do you think Trump would accept the role of puppet? He may have that. He may be pressured to. He may be pressured to accept it. But do you think that's something you can depend on him to do, to be a puppet?
I think he can be manipulated to the point where he wouldn't believe that he was the puppet.
That's possible. I mean, I don't doubt he can be manipulated where he doesn't think he's a puppet. It's a subjective point.
You can dangle the carrot any way you want, and you can get anybody's attention, and you can grab for something that so I think it's too early to tell at this point. I don't know.
But we're seeing the possibility, and the possibility is that promises that Trump made as if they were set in stone while he was running for the office during the election process are now being effectively abandoned, like eliminating the national debt, for example, or terminating Obamacare. And it's hard to know, it's hard to know whether this is evidence that Trump was lying to us all along, or he's just realistic now. He's got there and realizes this is a tougher job than he expected. And there are obstacles that he now realizes that he can't control to the extent that he thought he would once he got into the office. And he's a realist, I suppose. He's a pragmatist. And he said, okay, we've got to do the best. We've got to do work with what we've got. And I don't know what's going on here, but it is bizarre that after he has bombed, Syria, all of a sudden the people that hated him.
Love him.
Yeah, buddy. Trump, he's our man. If he can't bomb him, nobody can. You know? And I'm not turning on Trump. I've been so aggravated by the Bush administration and by the Obama administration, and I'm not going to believe any politician ever shows up again. I'm going to hope with him, but I'm not going to commit to him in a way that is hazardous to my health. I'm not. So we'll watch and see. I don't know. I still think he'll be competent. I think he's going to do perhaps the best job he can under the circumstances, but it's not going to be the job he was promising to do. I don't think
there was a lot of passion in this
big time
election,
and it even continued from the beginning, after the election.
And even to discuss the possibilities that perhaps, you know, we're not sure what we're getting, you know, people really wanted that hope that he was going to change things around.
Yep.
And we tried to tell people it's not going to be that simple. And we end up getting, you don't get so nice emails, you know, and you think that you're a turncoat and that you have to say, no, you know, this is a man. It isn't, you know, and you have to look at his strengths.
Well, this business about cutting the taxes. How is he going to do that? He needs an extra $1 trillion for infrastructure, but he's going to cut taxes. You can't.
Well, let me tell you this.
You know, that was clear from the beginning.
Hey, the federal government collected $1.47 trillion in the first half of fiscal 2017. Does everybody get that? $1.47 trillion, but still ran a deficit during that time.
I think they have to, because it's a debt-based monetary system. I don't think that's an accident. I don't think that's evidence of mismanagement. It's evidence we have a debt-based monetary system. They have to create more debt because it is our form of wealth in this country. As crazy as that sounds, that's what it appears. If you want the standard of living to increase, we have to go deeper into debt. In order to create more debt, in order to fund the debt-based monetary system. It's nuts. It's irrational. It's bound to blow up in our faces.
That wasn't my point, Al. But my point is the government is collecting. So how can you do all of these other things when you're collecting $1.5 trillion and you're still running a deficit? For whatever reason they have to run it, they run it. But the point is, how many more taxes can they collect?
Oh, I understand. Well, maybe not taxes. There's always bank accounts, pension funds.
How do you give tax cuts? Here's another thing. Trump
talk about it. You know,
Trump says Yellen
the promise of tax cuts. It's like currency, Melody. You don't actually get paid anymore. You get a promise of payment. Same thing with tax cuts. You don't really get a tax cut. You get a promise of a tax cut.
Trump says Yellen may stay on as Fed chair after her term expires in 2018. She might not be done as the Federal Reserve chair. President Trump told the Wall Street Journal that he was undecided to bring Yellen back as Fed chair after her term expires in 2018, saying she is, quote-unquote, not toast. He likes her. He respects her. It's very early. Well, I don't remember him saying those same things during the campaign. You know, he was talking about, that she was colluding with both the president, Clinton, and the Democratic Party and keeping, you know, the Fed's low interest rate policy. Well, he just came out yesterday saying, hey, we need low interest rate policy to continue. So, again, here's another dance around the, you know.
Well, he may be learning things that the people did not know or understand before he actually got into office. Some of the ideas that I espouse on these programs are, you know, a little bit unusual, and maybe I'm right. And if I am, then Trump is perhaps learning things. And he said, oh, my God, we can't cut the debt. Somebody set him down and said, now, look, we live in a debt-based monetary system. We can't cut the debt without destroying capital, paper, capital. Right? Trump may have had that lesson since he got into the office. And if he has, then he maybe said, oh my gosh, what are we going to do here? I can't cut the debt. Now, I'm not saying that happened, but it would not surprise me if that was the case.
Well, you know, again, it's, I don't, you know, it makes
we live
a very
in interesting
large
times,
question
that's for sure.
mark on what direction that we're really headed, and what did people really get when they voted, and so,
same
but
thing they
shouldn't
get.
Be too many. Shouldn't be too disappointed. It's, we get the same thing as what we always got. We learn who's really in control. The USA Today dropped massive bombs on ISIS. This is in Afghanistan. The strike targets tunnels in Afghanistan. It's the first time that they were used in combat. Ordnance use reflects changing nature of the enemy. So not a whole lot of, you know, information on that. You know, it's just a major, you know, headline. So, you know, he does seem to be a little... He did pledge, this is one thing, that in 2015, that if he became president, he would bomb the heck out of ISIS. So
only one promise he can keep. We still have plenty of bombs.
Yeah, I know. But has he become so distracted now? Because, I mean, you know, I can only imagine what it would be like to have that type of power at your disposal. And when you have the wrong type of personality
but you're going to get criticized. One of the hard things about being president, I believe,
you're
going to take serious criticism no matter what you do. All right? Almost. There might be a couple. You had an Easter egg hunt. I saw an ad today that they didn't think the Trump administration was properly prepared for the Easter egg hunt on the White House lawn come Easter. All right, so you even get criticism over that. There's a point. How much criticism can you stand? And coming from people that are serious and intelligent, and maybe they're lying, and maybe they're telling the truth, but they're exposing. Maybe they're exposing the truth, and that's embarrassing to you. Maybe they're lying. They are intentionally misunderstanding. It takes a thick skin, and you see people who go in there. Barack Obama, he came out with gray hair. I mean, it puts you under a lot of stress, even if you don't pay much attention to what's going on. So
it's
a tough job. It's a tough job.
It's a tough job. I get that.
Yeah.
But what the heck are you doing being there if you can't? You know, I don't have any empathy that's your job. Just
you
got
to be a little bit crazy to be president.
Just do it.
You
got to
be a little bit crazy to be president. It's like, you know, it's like being a Muslim. And if you do something, you're going to paradise and you'll have 72 virgins. Well, they're only going to be a virgin for one night. All right? And then you've got the rest of eternity to spend with 72 wives. I'm not absolutely certain. That's not an example. Beware what you wish for. You might get it.
Well, marry them.
Well, what difference
does
it make?
You know, you just get to bed them. It doesn't say anything. You have to marry them. So you and your marriage problems.
Well, I'm just saying, there's some things you got to look at and say, I want that. And you need to actually sit down and say, wait, do I really want that? Are there any complications? Is this a good idea or a bad idea? It's like we're taking you down to the ice cream parlor and you can eat all the ice cream you want. Okay, is that really a good thing? You know? Maybe it makes your diabetes act up or something. Maybe you need to think about that. Do I really want all that ice cream, or should I, you know, be sensible and have a salad? Hard to resist that. I mean, there are people running for the presidency all the time, or at least every 4 years, and they're not going to settle for a salad. They want the ice cream, whether it's good for them or not. They still want it, and you know. I don't know what to say. Here's something that's interesting. Trump declares U.S.-Russia relations may be at an all-time low. This is from the Associated Press. And it's just an illustration of the kind of instability that we're in right now. It was just, how long ago was it that people are saying Trump had this secret relationship with Putin, and they were buddies, and they were going to conspire to do one thing or another? Now, oh my gosh, maybe not. Maybe the whole thing is going to turn us. Here's another one. Trump on North Korea. We are sending an armada. All right? An armada that certainly signifies war. We are not sending a welcome wagon. We are sending an armada. It signals that somebody's going to get shot before this is all over. Got another one. Breaking. This is from Conservative Tribune. It says, breaking. Subhunters spotted frantically searching near U.S. coast. They have sighted a submarine off the coast of California. All right? They don't think it's either Russian or North Korean. All right, so people are, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about that? China, there was a report from China that they warned North Korea that if they detonate another nuclear weapon and it causes any pollution or health problems in adjacent Chinese provinces, China is going to invade North Korea. They're saying this is the red line, don't cross it. All right, this article was reportedly published by a Chinese military publication. It was up for a while, and then it was pulled and made to disappear. Who would have thought that we're going to see China threatening North Korea? It is entirely possible that the United States has cut a deal with China where we're sending the armada over there. We're going to bomb them, and China's going to invade them. And then we're either going to let China control North Korea, just run it, or perhaps we'll set it up where China and the United States work together to take care of North Korea. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying the reports suggest that possibility is not, just not so far-fetched. You can all just laugh about it. And all I'm saying is the whole world is becoming unstable, unpredictable. What's next? Does anybody really know? I mean, what are we going to see tomorrow, Melody? I mean, I'm going to get up. I'm going to live through the night in part just to see what? I can hardly wait to see tomorrow's news. And all of that is not conducive to economic stability. Right? It's not conducive to political stability. It is vibrating like that glass in a Memorex commercial back in the day. Somebody's singing and hitting high C, and the glass begins to vibrate. And is it live or is it Memorex? And then, bang, the glass shatters. Something like that appears to be at least possible for the global economy, the global political structure, the fiat currency, the United States economy. Lots of instability, and when you're faced with that, it's no surprise that the price of gold is going up. We'll watch and see how far it goes, but I can't see that we're coming to an end of it. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. I'll be back with James Corbett in just a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addisk and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with our guest, James Corbett from the Corbett Report. C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. Some of the best videos, podcasts, written articles on geopolitics, world economics, definitely worth your time. Hello, James, how are you doing?
I can't complain.
Yeah. Syria. Have we seen everything there is to see about Syria except for the whining and the crying, or is this going to get bigger?
Well, I mean, very good question.
Soon. I mean, yes. I'm not talking about 3 years from now, but in the next 90 days, is more coming, or is this going to be cooled down now?
Well, I don't think there's any cooling off that's happening at the moment, and we see that on every side. For example, we just had Sputnik News, basically a Kremlin mouthpiece media organization, reporting the other day, Russian general staff warns against new U.S. missile strikes on Syria. But perhaps even more to the point, we had the phenomenal statement by Putin the other day as he was giving a joint press conference with, I believe, the Italian prime minister, president. They were talking, and he was talking about the Syrian chemical weapons action, and he said, the English translation, quote, "We have reports from multiple sources that false flags like this one, and I cannot call it otherwise, are being prepared in other parts of Syria, including the southern suburbs of Damascus. They plan to plant some chemical there and accuse the Syrian government of an attack." And just to throw a little bit more gasoline on that fire, the latest reports that I'm seeing is that new satellite imagery is showing a U.S. military convoy heading to a brand new base in northern Syria, specifically in Aleppo province at Kobani, where the satellite imagery shows a military convoy that seems to be moving from Turkey to northern Syria. So it looks like it's getting more and more serious by the moment, and everyone seems to be ratcheting things up rather than trying to calm anything down.
What are the chances that Turkey is going to be the main force on the ground and the United States will not be introducing many troops?
That would be a logical way for the U.S. certainly to try to push for this to happen, and Turkey may go for that bait because certainly they definitely do want to see Assad ousted, although and they also have a very big interest in what happens if and when and as Assad is ousted, because they don't want Syrian Kurdistan erected on their border and their mortal enemies, the PKK and others, being invigorated by that. So certainly I think there could be some arm twisting and arm pulling if the U.S. wanted to do it that way, but I'm not sure that strategic thinking is really part of what's going on here at all, or those types of strategic decisions are really first and foremost in the minds of the war-obsessed neocon warmongers that seem to be in charge of what's going on right now. So I can't really offer that as a prediction, but it certainly would be one way for that to be done. But it looks like boots on the ground are there now, and it's just a question of when, how, and if they'll be used.
Given that boots on the ground may already be there, and the United States is liable to respond to the next chemical attack, more or less like they did to the most recent chemical attack, Is it really credible for the Russians to say that the Syria is planning, or false flags are being planned, excuse me, false flag attacks, more gas on more Syrians? Is the world going to believe that Assad is dumb enough to do this again? I mean, can we really make a second false flag attack and say, oh yeah, Assad's doing this again?
Actually, I see what you're saying, but I would say it's the exact opposite way around. The amazing thing is that they believed it in the first place, that mm-hmm. right on the verge, on the eve of these peace talks, at which Tillerson and others had already said that there are, the former U.S. State Department policy that Assad must go is not operative anymore. It's going to be up to the Syrian people. They were talking about this. The U.K. was saying they might go along with that. There was a huge turnaround happening. Obviously, military victory being almost assured by at this point. And on the verge of all of this, for some reason that has yet to be articulated, although the New York Times did a pathetic attempt at trying to articulate it, Assad decided to launch a chemical weapons attack. The one thing that would be the giant red flag that would cause all of this mayhem and basically assure the downfall of his destruction. The fact that anyone has swallowed that before any evidence was presented. The White House has now released a declassified four-page report in which they attempt to detail some of their information about why they believe this to be the case, although it's pretty lightweight and has already been deconstructed by people like Theodore Postel of the Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology, and National Security Policy at MIT. So it's already been deconstructed by experts in various fields, including pretty mainstream people. But anyway, they've now finally come up with it. But before that even happened, the entire world was lining up to say that they're 100% behind the U.S. on this, and because Assad clearly gassed his own citizens, we don't need to see any evidence, blah, blah, blah. The fact that all of that took place should pretty much virtually guarantee that in the event of another chemical weapons incident in Syria, regardless of any evidence whatsoever, it is going to be blamed on Assad, and he is going to be attacked, and everyone is going to line up to pay fealty to the U.S. as they do it. I can't imagine it would go in any other way. The only thing that could put a damper on that is someone like Putin coming out and saying they are planning a false flag attack ahead of time. That is the way to break that magic wand of the false flag attack, is to basically, you know, show the rabbit up the sleeve before the magician has a chance to pull it out of there.
So part of this problem is not just the fault of the government lying. It's the fault of the public being ready to believe these lies as if we were nothing but a bunch of children. Do you agree?
Oh, I completely do. Absolutely right. I don't want to victim blame here, because obviously the people who are perpetrating this are the ones that are culpable and responsible for it. But the public does have a part to play in this, and that is not to just simply go along with whatever they see on CNN. Oh, they said it on CNN. It must be the truth. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it, I suppose. I mean, the fact that it did go ahead, and that there's obviously a lot of people who have swallowed that line unquestioningly. But, I mean, let's put it in context. I think a lot more people are thinking in this forbidden, verboten, conspiratorial way than would have been the case a decade or two ago, when the idea of a false flag terrorist incident was still just completely unfathomable to the public. They'd never even heard of such a concept. At this point, at least people have heard of such a concept, and more people are at least willing to question received narratives like this. So I think it is, compared to a decade or two ago, I think there's a heightened level of consciousness around these issues, but clearly not enough to be that tipping point at this point. But I would say that if we continue trending along this way, and if we had the time and luxury to do so, in another, say, 5 or 10 years, can you imagine the inroads that alternative media operations like ours will have made in the public consciousness at that point? It will certainly make a difference, which is, of course, exactly why we are seeing the fake news narrative and the fact-checking sites and Google now doing their flagging certain sites and all of this
nonsense. Ministry of Truth.
The Ministry of Truth is coming in.
Yeah,
exactly. Because they're losing the battle. They're losing the battle for hearts and minds of the public. Not quickly enough, perhaps, for our sake, but at any rate, they are losing.
Where it was alleged and kind of generally believed by people who looked into this, I don't mean that the whole world agreed with this, but people who looked at it kind of agreed for the past several years that the real objective behind the attacks on Assad were to force him to allow the construction of a crude oil pipeline running from Saudi, or ultimately running from Saudi Arabia, if I understand correctly, into the European Union. Is that true?
Run that one through me by me again. That was Putin was being attacked by who?
No. What I was saying, you're trying to deal with your children at the same time you're trying to deal with the child in me. What I'm trying to get to is crude oil pipeline, ultimately from Saudi Arabia to the European Union, that had to go through Syria, and Assad wouldn't approve of the pipeline, and this allegedly precipitated the attempts to get Putin out of office. Is that a reasonable analysis of motivation here?
Well, there is absolutely pipeline politics being played in Syria, and that's been an exceptionally important part of this since the beginning, including the signing of a memorandum of understanding shortly before all of this began in 2011 on the Islamic pipeline, which was a proposed pipeline route. Again, there was an MOU that was signed just shortly before all of this started that was going to connect Iran, Iraq, and Syria in a pipeline that would then lead out through Syria, and then the gas would be shipped out to Europe, basically. And that, of course, was obviously put to a calamitous end by the 6 years now of destabilization in Syria. There are other developments that are of interest here, including the find of significant amounts of Israeli oil in the Golan Heights, which of course the Israelis are extremely interested in which certain energy interests like Genie Energy, which is a New York listed company that just happens to be advised by former Vice President Dick Cheney and whose shareholders include Jacob Rothschild and Rupert Murdoch, has already obtained exclusive rights to 153 square mile radius in the southern part of the Golan Heights. And so this has to be taken into account when we start looking at the kinds of motivations for what's going on in Syria. And I think that's a huge part of that. And so, I mean, obviously Putin and Assad are both pressured by these types of outside influences.
Why didn't Assad just say, fine, build your pipeline, see if I care? It's not as if it's going to take up their land. It's not going to destroy their country. I mean, it's a relatively narrow strip of land that's going to be dedicated to the pipeline. Why didn't he just go along? Even now, if the pipeline's the issue, why doesn't he just say, oh, build the damn pipeline, see if I care?
Well, I mean, that's maybe a question more for Assad than for myself. But, I mean, it is an interesting question because clearly Assad did cooperate to a large degree, perhaps was one of the most willing participants and collaborative participants in the region with the United States in the war on terror post 9/11. Assad and Syria were absolutely used by the CIA and other alphabet soup agencies as a dropping off point for people that they needed information from. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, you guys torture people in prisons, right? That was absolutely, Assad was a key part of that. He was a partner, a willing cooperative collaborator with them in that for many years. And yet, even though that was going on simultaneously, as we know for General Wesley Clark, Syria was on the hit list of 7 countries that the neocons wanted to hit, which included, of course, Iraq, and Libya and Syria. These were all the places that were on that hit list, that have been starting to fall like dominoes over the last few years. And that was in the days after 9/11. That literally goes back now almost a decade and a half. So it doesn't really matter if you're cooperating or not. When your time comes, when your number is called, mm-hmm. they're going to get you out one way or another. And previous collaborators and cooperators with the U.S., like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, would know about that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would now. They're not talking about it in this world. They may be talking about it in the next one. But in this one, they're not saying much about it anymore because their countries have been destroyed and they've been killed. And it should be a lesson that's penetrating a lot of people's... I mean, do you suppose Saudi Arabia looks at this and says, we can't trust the Yankees? Or do they think they're special? Yeah. Do you think that they say, we're special. They won't mess with us. We're the Saudi Arabians.
Again, you would think that if they had their head screwed on straight, they would see what's happening. And, I mean, not only that, but even just their base economic interests clearly show that China is really more of a customer for their future oil sales than the U.S. would be. The U.S. is now a net oil exporter, let alone an importer. So clearly, I think their bread could potentially be buttered more looking to the east than looking to the west in the United States. But... yeah, I mean, it's hard to break old habits. It's also hard when there are guns in the room, which clearly there are when we talk about things like the Saudi-U.S. alliance or whatever it is. It's clearly been based on the U.S. military umbrella. Hey, we'll protect you guys if you do the oil sales and dollars and all of that rigmarole of the petrodollar. Well, I mean, that's kind of the double-edged threat, isn't it? It's like the mafia coming up and... you know, we wouldn't want your place to burn down, but we'll protect you if you give us some money. I mean, that's kind of the deal that they have, so perhaps that's the side of it. And then, I mean, the other side of that is that the House of Saud is not exactly, I mean, it's not like these are shrewd political operators per se. These are just people who were really put into power by the Brits and the Americans as people who would cooperate with them. And, okay, you guys can call yourself royalty and we'll prop you up and help make sure that you're not overthrown, but you have to go along with us. So to a certain extent, they are the made men of people in the West who have put them into the position of power that they're in.
Well, when the dollar shed the last vestiges of its gold backing in 1971, soon after the Nixon administration created the petrodollar by reaching an agreement with Saudi Arabia that they would only sell their crude oil for dollars, created a demand for dollars, and effectively the dollar became backed by crude oil on the international market. Does this pipeline, let's suppose that they're concerned about the destruction of the fiat dollar, would the dollar be strengthened if Saudi Arabia was able to move a product directly into Europe, and if Saudi Arabia continued to demand dollars as payment for the crude oil, would it shore up and give the dollar a couple more years of life? You follow my question?
Could this be a real
reason for what they're doing? Is to protect a declining dollar?
I would say it might be on the list of reasons
for
what's happening right now. I don't think it would be particularly high on that list, but it is a factor, and it is obviously a consideration. It does obviously continue to make the dollar as strong as it's been in terms of the world reserve currency status, which is being chipped away at. So it's one of the factors and considerations that would go into this, although I don't think it's probably the determining one.
All right, we're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. I'm here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. And this is Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis, and I've got three more seconds to fill in before we go to break. No, I don't. All right, we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. I'm here with James Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, from thecorbettreport.com. We've been talking about Syria, and that would be enough to, I don't know, it's a sufficiently important subject. You could occupy the whole program with Syria. And let's talk one more question about Syria. There are rumors, right, or maybe just hype, that the problem in Syria could trigger World War III. Do you think that's a credible threat?
I wouldn't dismiss it. Let's put it that way. I don't know how pending or serious that or how imminent it is. So, you know, what minute the doomsday clock should be set to, but it is a possibility, and I don't think it should be laughed away. Especially given the escalation that we're seeing right now with Russia standing up and the U.S. standing up, and I mean, in the event of the next chemical weapons incident, whoever it's actually by or what, you know, whoever it ends up getting blamed on. Can you imagine what the response and counter-response to that is going to be in this environment? I mean, either it leads to direct confrontation between the U.S. and Russia, or it's seen as a significant stand-down by one or the other side and a significant loss of face on the international scale. No matter how that plays out, that's a significant event. But World War III is at least one of those options.
I'm inclined to dismiss World War III at least as an intentional consequence, meaning somebody sitting out there who is a major power and they're saying, we want war. We want World War III. They might want a skirmish that takes place and another one that takes place in the Middle East. I don't see World War in the sense that we're attacking Russia and Russia's directly attacking the United States. I don't see that happening where someone made that choice, at least not someone in Russia or someone in the United States and their governments. But accidents.
Yeah.
Accidents.
Well,
all of a sudden somebody does something stupid, and next thing you know, one thing leads to another, and the dominoes start falling, and boom, boom, boom.
Well, there are Dr. Strangeloves in the U.S. power structure, for sure, and I'm sure there are their counterparts in Russia. Let's just hope they don't get anywhere near the actual centers of power.
Well, let's talk about another conflict that's facing us this week. U.S. aircraft carrier moves to North Korea. Headline. U.S. aircraft carrier moves to North Korea closer than ever to outright war. Just a headline. What's going on in North Korea?
Well, it is the 105th birth anniversary of founding president and still actually technically the leader of North Korea, even though he's dead, Kim Il-sung. He's technically the head of state. Which is, I mean, I suppose it's a laughing matter until you think about the state that North Korea is actually in. Anyway, it is his 105th birth anniversary this weekend, and foreign journalists are being told to prepare for a big and important event on Thursday, which, on my side of the dateline here in East Asia, is today. So I don't know what that means. No one really knows what that means. There's no indication that this is directly related to the military things that are going on right now or the nuclear weapons program or anything of that sort, but it certainly could be. And I would expect that there will be some sort of major something this weekend because North Korea likes to use these opportunities for propagandistic purposes and to blow puff its chest up. So whether that's just another nuclear weapons test of some sort or a missile launch of some sort, or whether it's, you know, invading South Korea, I really couldn't say. I really don't know. But at this point, again, it's one of those situations where everything is so on the knife edge that it doesn't even have to necessarily be a intentional move. If someone making a wrong move on the wrong day or a hot-headed general can set off a major military confrontation. And here in Japan, we get a front row seat to whatever's about to play out there.
Is that a wanted? Is that a? Do you pay a premium for that, being that close for getting a front row seat? Is that something? Because I'd rather be in the back row.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to that, especially if it does go military. I don't personally think that North Korea is an intentional. I mean, I don't think Japan is their number one target at this point. It would certainly be a target for them, specifically for the American military objectives that are here in Japan that they might think of targeting and might be easier to hit than Hawaii or whatever. But at any rate, I'm not sure I feel it as much as perhaps the South Koreans would or even the Chinese, because again, this is a major event for China. Whatever happens in North Korea, unless this regime collapses very gracefully and happily, China is facing major headaches of their own, including millions of starving North Koreans flooding across their borders and the U.S. military right on their doorstep if they do take over North Korea. So obviously this is not just about North Korea. It's about everything that's going on in the Asia-Pacific region, really.
The whole thing becomes bizarre. China moved approximately a week ago, if I understand correctly. China moved about 150,000 troops to the border with North Korea. At the time, I presumed, and I think other people did, that this 150,000 troops were there in the event of some sort of an American invasion of North Korea. But now we get a report that was in the newspaper at least briefly. China says it will attack North Korea's nuclear facilities if Kim Jong-un crosses a red line. China is concerned that North Korea may do something to cause nuclear pollution of the adjacent Chinese provinces. And they're saying, you mess around and you hurt our people, we're going to invade you. Now, who would have bet on that? There's a headline. Yeah. Who predicted that? I want to see who predicted that China, a week in advance. Did anybody predict China was going to threaten to invade North Korea?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's a good point. I don't think a lot of people have talked about this. I've often pointed to China as being really the deciding player in this, because they clearly do prop up the North Korean government with their trade. And so they're always, I mean, clearly any deal that's made has to involve China. But you're exactly right. I mean, I think that the most likely way for this to play out would be for example, whatever was discussed at the summit between Xi Jinping and Trump last week at Mar-a-Lago, one can imagine that one of the scenarios is, okay, you know, they do a nuclear test and China, will you guys go in there and take care of it militarily and we won't declare you a currency manipulator. And hey, lo and behold, this week, Trump says, oh, you know that contract with America and our promises for the first 100 days and all that, where we specifically said we were going to label China a currency manipulator? Ah, forget all that. They're not a currency manipulator. So that part's already come to fruition. And there's the suggestion this is some sort of quid pro quo over North Korea. Maybe it is. China, you guys take care of it militarily. It's a win-win, as it were, for U.S. and China, because it takes care of North Korea. And for China, it's better for them to be militarily taking over North Korea and making sure it doesn't collapse in some sort of disastrous heap, rather than to have the U.S. military knocking on their doorstep doing that. So I think China would obviously prefer that to happen. It actually makes sense from a number of different perspectives.
We are faced with the possibility that the United States could fly over and bomb North Korea, and China could put the boots on the ground to capture North Korea. And which takes us to, reminds me, I saw a map 2 weeks ago that dealt with the history of Asia, and one of the points in the map is that North Korea used to be part of China. And it may be, without me being a student of this subject, but it may be that North Korea has ties to China that are not merely political. Maybe the South Koreans are one people, the North Koreans are another people that are more closely associated with China than they are with South Korea. Is there any validity to that suspicion?
I mean, clearly there's an intermingling of history and ethnicity and things. I mean, even when we talk about China, we talk about it as if it is one ethnic and homogenous whole. But of course, I mean, there's the Han Chinese versus other types of Chinese. And so you have to go into the political history of Korea or Gojoseon. I don't know how to pronounce that, as it was, you know, as it was first known when it first became a political entity. And it was invaded by the Han Dynasty, and the ethnic peoples in that area hated the Han Chinese and the Chinese rule. And then there was a Japanese occupation. But Japan, when you look at its history and its influence, cultural influence from China and all of that. So, I mean, there's a lot of intermingling that goes on here. And I think it's, yeah, I mean, we tend to think of the map as it exists today as being reflecting some sort of historical situation that's always existed. But, of course, we have to keep in mind that these are lines on maps that were drawn sometimes in the very recent history, and not really reflective of, you know, the ethnic and historical lines that that, you know, divide or separate or combine people. So, long story short, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of intermingling of history and culture that goes on in between China and the Korean Peninsula generally, including, of course, North Korea.
So, what's the possibility that Trump might have said to the premier of China?
President.
All right, president of China. Let's make a deal here. We will bomb North Korea. You put the boots on the ground, and you take control of North Korea and essentially annex it to China.
Yep. I think that's a perfectly reasonable possibility of what they could have talked about, and it makes sense from a number of different perspectives. The only thing that would be really weird about that is a seeming 180-degree about-face from the Trump administration on China, because, I mean, clearly, this is one of those kind of status quo situations where any change in the status quo is a significant event and will, you know, completely redraw the relations between these countries. Like Taiwan. If anything happens with Taiwan on either way, you know, either the U.S. is going to lose face or China is going to lose face, and neither one can let that happen. So we'll just have this weird, is it a country? Is it a separate thing? What is it? How is it diplomatically related to other parts of the world? You know, let's just all kind of sweep it under the rug. I think North Korea is kind of like that. So the only thing that would be shocking about that is if the U.S. kind of lets China militarily occupy North Korea and take it over, then that is a significant change in status quo, and that, you know, and certainly South Korea would feel absolutely thrown under the bus by something like that.
I understand they'd be happy
about that. So that, I mean, there'd be some significant.
What about Japan? What about Japan? Again, it doesn't directly. I mean, Japan is not across the border exactly, but it's sufficiently close by. They're going to be afraid that, oh my gosh, China's going to take. They took over North Korea. Now South Korea is next, and how long before they come after us?
I mean, again, it would completely change power relations in the region. And again, not because North Korea is some sort of powerhouse that they're, you know, thinking about. The economic effects of this or anything per se, but again, just because it does change that status and it does make China into something that really is a growing force, and in that case, perhaps a politically growing force on the continent.
Let's one last story. We have about 3 minutes left. Here's something from Veterans Today, and it came out on March 25th. It's a couple of weeks old right now. But I'm curious whether you think this is a valid story or was it a mistake. They said exclusive nuclear explosion in Ukraine. At least one nuclear weapon cooked off during the massive Ukraine munitions depot explosions. And this is the story behind it, and they give some information. We assert that a nuclear weapon went off in Ukraine and more than one may have fizzled. Now, this would go back a couple of weeks ago. Do you think this is credible information, a mistake, a hoax? And it was from Veterans Today, reasonable source.
I would dispute reasonable source, considering that the person behind that website has absolutely admitted on the radio that 30 to 40% of what he publishes is lies. because he says he's under threats. So he, you know, to save himself, he lies to his audience, and so that he'll, you know, he won't be taken out by the people who are. I think that's probably a lie. But at any rate, the person who runs that site admits that there are lies published on that site, and this is the same site that said that Israel was busted nuking Yemen last year. Again, total hoax and fraud. So no, I don't believe this story.
Well, I haven't heard any more from it in the 2 weeks, so I was inclined to just, you know, deny that it was legitimate, but it was such an outrageous statement. I wasn't aware of the history of Veterans Today, but I thought you would know. I figured if there was something going on, if it was any truth to a nuclear explosion, even by accident, that's all this is talking about. I don't even know. Can you cause a nuclear explosion by setting the bomb on fire?
I'm not a nuclear scientist.
It doesn't seem
likely. They have to be armed and detonated in a precise way, and just lighting them on fire is not exactly the way to do that.
We've got about 45 seconds left. What should people be looking for in the next week, month, whatever you think is it? What's going to happen just between now and the end of April?
That's quite the time frame. Let's go more expansive. The newsletter that I'm writing this weekend for the International Forecaster editorial will be about China and Russia and a lot of different things that are coming online right now with Russia's own SWIFT banking network and China-Russia central bank relations and things like this. They are setting up the financial infrastructure for what they call quote-unquote globalization 2.0, which will be the new world order led by the BRICS. So that's what I'm going to be writing about this weekend.
All right, we'll look forward to it. James, thanks very much for your time. I always enjoy the interviews. Look forward to talking to you again in about 2 weeks. It's James Corbett, my guest. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. Be back with Melody Cedarstern tomorrow. Please tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, James Corbett, Todd the producer. Good night.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.